Welcome to the 100th episode of Comedians with Ghost Stories. I am your host, writer, and comedian Emily Winter. I can't believe 100! 100 episodes! Am I insane? Maybe. But I do feel like I have a better hold now on what is happening when we see a ghost or when we die. I'm feeling more confident after having done 100 episodes, and I hope you are too, and I hope to have 100 more wonderful episodes. So, today's guest. I interviewed her a while ago. I did not know her when I started the interview. We had never met. And you'll hear it on this podcast. I am crying. I am just rapt. She is a person who you meet and then you're like, oh, I have just met an extremely special, extremely magical human. And I am so honored that she did the pod. I've been saving this episode for the 100th episode because I thought it would be great because we talk about not only her paranormal experiences and her spiritual experiences, but also suicide and being a bit psychic and a lot of things that we've touched on over the episodes, but we talk about all of it here. So anyway, Sam Bowling is amazing, and this 100th episode is so special to me, and it also happens to be right around the time that she is doing a one-woman show about her friend who died by suicide, and the one-woman show is called This Was Never Supposed to Be a One-Woman Show, a one-woman show, and it starts here at the Hollywood Fringe Festival on June 2nd and runs throughout June. She gives the specific dates at the end, but I will put the link in the show notes to get tickets. I will absolutely be going, and I hope you will too. Also, for people on the other side of the country, I'm going to be in Pittsburgh throwing my 64 Comedian One-Liner Madness show, where 64 local Pittsburgh comics go head-to-head in a March Madness-style single elimination joke tournament. That is going to be on Saturday, June 24th, and I will put the ticket info in the show notes as well. I hope you love this 100th episode. Thank you for the support. I look at the numbers on this podcast every week, and if I found that no one was listening, I would not have gotten this far. So please, you know, rate, review, tell your friends, but mostly please keep doing what you're doing, and thank you for coming this far with me. Today on the podcast, I am super excited to have Indigenous actress, comedian, and writer Samantha Bowling. Samantha, welcome to the pod.
Hello, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here. Oh my gosh. Is very cool.
I am very happy to have you on, and I cannot wait to hear about your ghost story. And you're also a Los Angeles person.
I am. I'm in Los Feliz. Some might say it's Thai Town, but I will dig my heels in.
Is your ghost story from LA?
Yes. My ghost stories are from sort of all over. So I grew up in Cincinnati, and like my first sort of big one was in Cincinnati. And, but a lot of the things that have sort of happened since then have been out here.
Okay.
And, they kind of span all over the place.
Tell me about your Cincinnati experience, because that sounds like one of your first ones. Yeah.
Sure. I'll start by saying, like, I just want to say, like, I've listened to a few episodes of this, and I'm so glad that this is, like, a believing space, because I will say, like, I tend to chameleon to whoever I'm talking to, and when it comes to, like, my belief in this stuff, it kind of fluctuates, like, in accordance to whomever I'm sort of talking to and whether or not they're open. Like, I believe as much as the person I'm talking to, where if, like, someone is not a believer, I'll find all the ways to, like, explain away the synchronicities, but I do find, and it's super funny, it's always way more convoluted to figure out, like, practical ways that stuff isn't real. Like, you need a lot more faith to not believe than you do to believe. But some people just want to be not into it. And
right.
That's okay.
I totally agree. And I'm coming from a space where, like, I absolutely believe. However, I have definitely talked to people where I'm like, this is not a thing. This is you lost your keys and then you found them. So I'm a believer, but I am not just, like, blindly following everybody, because that would also be insane, I think.
Right. Right. Yeah. Some discernment. It's definitely, so I say all this with, like, the tone of, like, if you believe such things, which, like, I hope I age into that niche. Like, you know how some people sort of like age, like Pedro Pascal is like a good example of like, he kind of aged into his niche where like, if you look at his older stuff, he's handsome and he's a good actor, but he's not like Pedro Pascal. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. He just kind of looks like a handsome, but like maybe malnourished turtle without a shell. Do you know what I mean? It's like, hey, handsome, where's your house? You know, like he's not Pedro Pascal. Now he is. And, 'cause he aged into his niche, you know, he kind of his face filled out and he aged like a fucking fine wine. I hope that happens to me, but I do feel like my niche is going to be like the whimsical, like horror movie witch who's like, if you believe such things, you know, this is very much how I approach my experiences, all of this.
I love it. And you're, this is a rare moment where I'm excited for aging. You are very convincing. Yeah.
Well, I do. I will. I'm friends with elders. There's like elders in my tribe that like, I really just connect with on a lot of different levels and I just value them so much. I value their experience in life. And like, I seek out their advice and also just their company and their like friendship. And we're so lucky to have the opportunity to age. Do you know what I mean? A lot of what I'm going to talk about is about a friend of mine passing away. Mm-hmm. And when I, you know, I'm 35 and I look at my face kind of aging and I start to notice those changes and part of me goes, oh, but then another part of me goes, man, I'm so fucking lucky. Mm-hmm. You know, so many people don't ever get to see what their face looks like
when it ages. Yeah.
When it ages like a fine wine. And so, yeah. Yeah. I take it like that. so yeah. Thank you. Okay. So I'm Sam, I'm a comedian, I'm indigenous, Cherokee and Powhatan descent on my dad's side. And over the last few years, I don't know, maybe 10 or 20 years, I've kind of come to understand or like be open to the idea that I might be clairsentient. Like I have a laundry list of like really meaningful paranormal, if you would call it that, experiences. And I sort of chalk a lot of that up to being raised in an environment that was sort of spiritually open to such things.
Okay.
Like my mom's dad was a Presbyterian pastor. And I know that like Presbyterian is very conservative. It's very political. Like Mike Pence is Presbyterian. So like that was sort of part of the culture, but also like my grandfather specifically, mm-hmm. it just had a very open mind about other kinds of spirituality. And especially when it came to indigenous stuff, there was a lot of times where he would sort of be like, you know, oh, I think the Indians have it right. Maybe the Christians don't. And so
amazing.
Just this open-mindedness about what spirituality is and where energy comes from. And I was also lucky to like my mother believed me or at least entertained me when I would notice things or when I would kind of piece things together. And I'm kind of grateful for that. And especially my aunt, my dad's sister and my dad's mom, they're just remarkably intuitive, especially with each other. I remember I noticed it the most. I was new as a thing, but it was sort of like undeniable when my grandmother died. Mm-hmm. Was the first, I wouldn't call it paranormal. I call it spiritual like experience that I had.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's absolutely. I feel like they are hand in hand and it's sort of right. Whatever you want. And spiritual is more familiar and like loving in a way when you, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like it really just depends on the lens through which you see it. Like you might experience them like this and be kind of spooked out, but mm-hmm. if that's only if you're like afraid of ghosts, if you see them sort of the way that we do, where it's, they're just people that just want to come hang out. You know, like when we have ceremonies and stuff, we invite them in, we include them because they are part of our community and their presence is valued. And so having that perspective and seeing that sort of like play out in my family in different ways, was cool. I that's a superpower. That's something that not a lot of people
you have a really unique upbringing too. I mean, yeah. To not only be Cherokee, but then also have this Presbyterian background, but having it be open and then being able mm-hmm. to sort of dip a toe in both and mm-hmm. be, yeah, is kind of amazing. Yeah.
A lot of intersections mm-hmm. in my existence here. But yeah, so my grandma fell at the grocery store when she was like 88 and oh. they rushed her to the hospital and they found stage 4 stomach cancer that had metastasized to her pancreas.
Whoa.
And she was given, you know, kind of like a deadline. Mm-hmm. Which I'm just realizing how funny of a pun that is.
Yeah.
I never realized that that was a pun, but now that I think of it in this context.
A literal deadline.
It's
yeah.
Very funny. Be dead. That's very funny.
So she was given like a couple weeks to live or something?
Yeah. I don't remember exactly what amount of time it was, but yeah, she, you know, was given the opportunity to pursue treatment, and she was kind of like, nah, I'm good. Like, I've had such a good life. Just give, you know, let me spend the rest of my time saying thank you and I love you to everyone I lived my life with, and let's fucking go. So Christmas was her favorite holiday. She'd save up all year for Christmas Eve to throw like a sick party for our family and do gifts. And it was her heaven. So that year, she made her phone calls and visited with her people and started to get, you know, real fragile in like December, but kept telling us she was going to try to make it through to Christmas Eve. So by the time Christmas Eve rolls around and they had moved into palliative care, which is, if you know what palliative care is, it's basically just where they try to make you comfortable for your transition.
Mm-hmm.
And they had already moved her onto the liquid morphine. Now, I don't know what you know about liquid morphine, but like that shit fucks you up. Like you're mm-hmm. basically, you can't communicate once you move into liquid morphine, like it's the end. You're just so, so fucked up. But like my Aunt Gail, which is my namesake, it's a family name, it's my middle name too, was still able to communicate with my grandma through this just really strong intuitive channel between the two of them. And around like 6 or 8, if I remember correctly, just the time that we would normally do presents on Christmas Eve, my aunt started pacing the house, just really like her energy was just really like worked
manic.
Up, like almost manic. Yes. And
yeah.
she just kept saying she's ready, but she can't leave. She feels like we're not going to be okay without her, you know? And just, it like clicked on her at one point. She was like, we have to go in and tell her that we're going to be okay without her.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't need to be in pain anymore. And we're kind of like, okay, weird. But like we humor her. In my head, I'm a little bit like, wow, how cool that she knows that. But also, I don't know if she really knows that. Like, she might just be grieving and like going a little off. And like, you know, we kind of humor. We all go into my grandma's room and put hands on her, not in a fighting way, in like a prayer way.
Lay hands, yeah,
yeah. And it kind of starts as a low rumble, and I think it was Gail that kind of started it, just saying, "Mom, it's okay, you can go." Like almost as a whisper, and like we all join in real hesitant. There's like 20 of us in the room. I have a lot of cousins. It starts with Gail, and she's just like, "Mom, it's okay, you can go." And it kind of just grows. Like we hear each other saying, "Grandma, it's okay, you can go." And it hearing everybody else encouraging her kind of galvanizes us, and the energy just builds, and it's growing and growing and growing to the point where it's like a fucking football game in my grandma's room of us just going, "Go, Grandma! Go see your mama! Go towards the light! We love you! Go, go! Thank you! Go, go!" And then all of a sudden, with this build, there was just this moment that I can only describe as like an inhale. But imagine, like, okay, so you know that shot that Spielberg is kind of famous for, where he, I don't remember what it's called, but it's like he pans in while he pulls the camera out, or vice versa, and it kind of, it keeps the subject of the shot in focus while the background kind of like warps around.
Yes.
This moment felt like that, but like an inhale. It was just sort of this warping, enveloping energy where we all felt her. It wasn't like she hovered above us and like waved
right.
goodbye and like left. It was like we shared her last breath, and then she just flew at her feet, just gone. Just right then, we knew it. We all felt it. It was silent. We went from screaming to absolute silence at the exact same time. And my aunt told my cousin who's a nurse to like take my grandma's pulse, and she was gone in that moment. That was the moment that she left.
Oh my gosh. And like the whole family just felt it.
We all felt it. We shared it with her. And like
that's
you
so
know,
beautiful.
Yeah, I think so. If you ask me, it's the most beautiful thing I've ever witnessed in my life. If you ask my sister, who was holding her toddler, who was very confused, if you ask her, it was like horrifically traumatizing. Like we talked about it years later, where I was like, "Wasn't it beautiful?" And she was like, "What the fuck are you talking about? That was horrible. Can you imagine being granny? Like everyone she ever loved in a room screaming at her to die. Like that does not, it doesn't sound good to her." But
that's
I
so
thought
funny.
It was beautiful. things.
It just makes me feel like the system that we have right now, and like white people basically have it all fucked up.
yeah, in a way. And there's this mysticism around death and the process of dying that I feel like has been sort of commodified in a way. And it's not traditionally like that in our culture. In fact, there was an episode, I don't know if you watch Reservation Dogs, but it's the best TV show in the history of TV shows, and I love it. And there's this spoiler alert, there's a character who kind of passes that way. And when I saw that episode, I had two thoughts. I was like, is that like the Indian way to go? Like, man, we even die Indian. That's kind of cool. But like this idea that our ancestors were like guiding my aunt from the other side on like how to go through this ritual, and like created that channel to sort of like pull her into them, was very cool. I really love the idea that we were like passing her off to her other people. I think it's beautiful. And then when I saw that episode, I also thought, man, every time I say that story, people would think that I got it from the show. And that's not fair.
Yeah. It was my story first.
Come on. Yeah. And who knows that like a lot of people haven't had that experience. It's just people don't like to talk about death.
So you said your sister was kind of freaked out by it, but you thought it was beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, that was beautiful.
Did you talk to anybody else in your family about it at any point to like sort of get their like take on it?
You know, no, it's really just been my sisters, and my one sister didn't really remember it, I don't think. And then, and then Rachel was sort of like traumatized by it. I feel like I was standing right next to my dad, and my dad, he was just real quiet. Just, you know, he just had his eyes closed. He was just sitting there praying with her. And I've never talked to him about it, but I could feel how hard it was for him. I don't think it was like a beautiful experience for him either. I think it was like a really hard thing to let his mom go.
I'm terrified of losing my parents. And I think about it all the time now that I'm getting older and they're getting older. And like, yeah, so I get it. I mean, you can usher in death in like a beautiful way, but it's not your best day, you know?
Yeah, no. I think of it like birth. Like we think of death like it's this, like death is not an end any more than birth is a beginning, you know. And the process of dying, I feel like spiritually is similar in life, where like in life, you're sort of building an identity and building an experience for yourself, where it's like, you get to be an individual person on this side. And you have like the boundaries of a body that like keep your spirit in one place and keep it tethered to one perspective. And on the other side, you're sort of disintegrating that and reintegrating into a conscious collective. So it's sort of the opposite process. And like on this side, we kind of long for the interwoven like universal interconnectedness that beckons from the other side. But on that side, I think that they are kind of like, they just love watching us and being part of our story, to have an individual with the story to tell with their own perspective and have that privacy and those boundaries. I think is I think there's sort of that trade-off where it's like, if you think of it like a like two half circles put together, where like one side has one perspective and the other side has the other perspective, and, and they have each other's sixes in that way. I feel like that's the circle I feel like of life.
That was so articulate and beautiful. And I am going to like hold on to this audio because people are like, well, what do you think happens when you die? And I'm like, I'm just going to play this and be like that.
I love it.
And it's also, I think, to the point of the topic of this podcast, it's more about ghost stories, but having comedians on here and stuff, that collective energy that you feel when you're on stage, that you that is like so palpable, that's so beautiful. And you're talking about us yearning for not the individual, you're us yearning for the community, because we are stuck in these individual bodies. Like, I feel that is like an expression of that yearning. You know what I mean? Because you get that like collective energy going, and it's like amazing.
Absolutely. And I feel like that's what I get from art too. I feel like that's what I get when I do plays and when I share stuff that I've written. It's when you create, it's like such an intimate version of who you are, and to be able to share that with people, even if it's in like a comedic way, even if it's like, you know, not completely sincere, it's like you're still, there's an intimate part of you that you're offering up to, you know,
and then I feel very lonely after I create something. I feel very lonely. Like the emotional hangover of that is so tough. Yeah.
I get that too. I try to like plan things after projects to like keep me, to just like get me back in my body and like get me, okay, like this is over and we're going back to our life and life is still great. It's just that was really, really great.
That was
And
really great.
now, yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
no,
I totally
absolutely.
get you.
Oh,
Yeah.
that's amazing. So you have this experience before you come out west, and
Yeah, and I
then
don't know if that opened up a channel or a portal or like whatever the fuck, but after that, I was just getting messages and downloads just left and right, just receiving all kinds of bizarre things I had no way of knowing. Like I could talk for days about just all the little things, but I mean, I have intuited like people's addresses before.
What?
Like
Say
I,
more.
yes, well, I haven't talked to this person yet, and I feel like it's, I feel like I don't, I would feel more comfortable sharing that publicly if this was not the first time they were hearing about it.
Okay, totally fine.
If
Yeah,
that makes sense. But like they, you know, like my entourage, my spiritual, like, you know, I think of them as my ancestors, but you know, like the conscious collective, spirit guides, whatever you want to call them. They have like literally told me where people live. And that's kind of, my friends think it's cool. You think it's cool. I can tell. I think it's a little freaky.
awesome.
I get a little freaked out by it sometimes because I'm like,
Can
I'm
you
not
send?
supposed to have this information.
I want, I, yeah, no, I think that. Yeah. It's wonderful, and I want you to intuit some people's addresses and send them a box of poop for me. It can be your dog's poop. I don't care whose poop it is,
I got
but
plenty
I
of
have some enemies and I need them to have
that.
poop sent to their door.
Retribution. Okay, I'll see what I can do. I'll see if I can do some investigating and figure it out.
So how do these messages like come to you, and how do you feel them, and what do you do when you receive?
A lot of times when I receive them, I just kind of hold on to them and I kind of go, okay, because I have in the past gone directly to a person to be like, I got a download about you, and it's like not the right time, and like they were not ready to hear it, and it actually kind of fucked them up. And then other times it's been better. I'll give you an example. So my friend Mandy, my bestie from back home. So I'm a Libra, and like some of my best friends are like my polarities. Remember, it's like that other sides of the circle. My friend Mandy is an Aries Taurus cusp. And she knew my friend that I'm about to tell you about. But Mandy's father passed away when she was like, I think 13. And she always really missed him and you know, always really like hoped that he was like a part of her life. And you know, many years later, she met a really lovely man named Vince, and they decided that they wanted to get married. And I, hold on. Mandy's mother also had some health issues that were real kind of, I don't want to say hit or miss isn't the right thing, but it's just like every now and then it'd be like, oh, we got a health crisis, we gotta deal with this. And so many years later, I was out here in LA, and I got a save the date in the mail for their wedding for a June, for it was June, it was a year from now that they were going to get married. And I was like, oh, that's wonderful. And then a couple days or weeks later, I don't remember the date. I'm going to make up a date, but the date is important. I'm going to say like June 6th. I was in my kitchen. I was digging around my fridge, and I go to close the door, and I feel her dad with me. And I don't know if you've ever felt this, but like, you know, when you're like at a crowded bar or something and you feel somebody's eyes on you and you like turn
Yes.
and look exactly where it is, you know exactly who it is that's looking at you.
Yes.
Presences are like that, where it's like you feel them in the room as undeniably as like if Bowie walked into my room just or walked into the room just now. Like I know he's in the room with me, even if I don't see him or even if I don't hear him, I know he's there. And so I don't always know who it is, and I don't always know who the message is for, but I knew this was Mandy's dad. And what he said to me, and it's not language, right? I'm not hearing like a voice of God or anything. When I think about like how communication works, you have a thought or a feeling, and then you have to formulate that. You have to be able to recognize what that thought or feeling is, formulate it into words, push those words out your brain through your mouth, and then the other person has to hear them with their ears, process it, what it means with their brain, and then that understanding sort of like settles. And then communication has happened. When you get like a download, that the language part goes away. All of the words and all the specifics of communication are still there, but the medium of it kind of, you cut out the middleman of like language. So like I get this download that he really likes Mandy's husband, And I was kind of like, okay, neat. And I'm thinking like, they're not married yet. Like, I wonder how that works. Cause I feel like I understand that like time on the other side is very different, mm-hmm. where it kind of, we think of time like a line, like this happens and then this happens and then this happens. And you like, it makes like this line. But if you like take that line, lift it up, turn it like 90 degrees so that it's like, you're looking down the barrel of like a, I don't want to say barrel of a gun.
Looking down a tunnel,
right? You see it all at once, and you mm-hmm. and it sort of recategorizes itself into patterns. And I feel like that's like a, I feel like that's the way spiritual time works, you know. And we have this idea of like that time is sort of like a spiral, that like you're going up a spiral staircase, and you're gonna keep running into the same like views every time you go around, but every time you experience that same pattern again, you're a little bit more elevated and you have a little bit more of a perspective mm. on it. And like, that's what like growing and learning is and stuff. So anyway, I'm sitting here thinking maybe since they're gonna get married in a spiritual sense, maybe they're already married. Like maybe if he was ever gonna be her husband, then he was her husband when he was born, even though they hadn't met yet. You know, I'm just pondering all of these because I'm a baby at this. So a few months or weeks later, August-ish, Mandy's mother passes away.
Ugh.
And I call her and just to talk to her and just to be like, you know, just to be there for her. And she said, I really wanted my mom to be there for my wedding. I really wanted my family, you know, I'm getting married in a year and I don't have any parents to be there. And I was like, well, I hear you. This is all valid. And also, your dad came to me the other day and she was like, what? And I was like, yeah, he said he really liked your husband. And I was like, you know, I basically told her everything I just told you, where I was like, I don't know if somebody who has ever been your husband is always your husband, because that's how time works on the other side. Like maybe when he was born, he was your husband. And so that's why he said the word husband, but he specifically said husband. She was like, what day was that? I was like, eh, like I looked at my calendar. It was like June 6th. And she was silent. And I was like, are you okay? Is this okay? Is it weird that I'm telling you this? I'm sorry. This is probably super triggering for you. And she goes, no, Sammy. She's the only person that can call me Sammy, by the way. No one else can call me Sammy. She's like, no, Sammy, my mom, her health took like a turn and I was really scared that my mom wasn't going to be able to see me get married. So on June 6th, we went into the woods with, I can't think of the word right now, the guy that marries you.
Yeah.
With Vince's mom and Vince and Mandy and her mom, and they eloped and they got officially married on that day.
Oh my God.
And he came to me. Yeah, he came to me on that day to tell me that he really liked Mandy's husband. And I think about that sometimes, where I'm like, sometimes messages have not landed well when I've just gone straight to them. But in that moment, I think it might have been really meaningful for Mandy to know, like, your dad is there. Your people are there. They are always there. They show up. They show up for you. So like, they love weddings. They love births. They love music, like live music, like playing, because time, they don't have time over there. Like time is, music needs time. You have a beat and then you wait a second. You have another beat and then you wait a second. They can't do that over there. So like, they love music. They love visiting us for music and like, you know, weddings and all that celebration. Like it's just really important to them. So like, your people are there for your wedding. Your people are there for your births. Your people are there to like pull you in when it's time for you to pass too. Like, you know, and you can tap into them too if you just get quiet and think of them. Anyway, that was sort of a big thing.
Amazing. That's so amazing. Oh my God. I have not cried on this podcast. If ever. Holy cow. Oh, that is awesome. I love that story. Holy cow. That's and then cool. That must have been very validating for you as like discovering that you can do this, being like, oh, wow, I'm kind of psychic.
Yeah, it definitely, that was one of them. That was one of the things that was sort of like, okay, I don't think this is a mental illness. I think that like, this is an ability to channel, and it's really come in handy. It really came in handy when my close friend and creative partner passed away. Cause you know, some things that you got to know about me is Take me as crazy if you want to, like if it helps you sleep at night and it helps you explain away any magic, if that's something that you for some reason want to believe is not real. I have some mental health diagnoses. I have a panic disorder, I have generalized anxiety disorder, I have clinical depression, I have a heart condition and ADHD. So, you know, you really can have it all. don't ever let anyone tell you otherwise. But what I do not have is psychosis. I don't see or hear things that aren't real. Like, you know, no shame to any of that, but like, I know where I am. I know where the ground is. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was hospitalized for depression. That's code, in 2015. And when I came out of that, I had a conversation with my sister that really showed me that I had to get better. I was not allowed to hurt myself again. I could not do that to her. She like encouraged me, but also like held me accountable. And from that point on, I dug my heels in and I really made managing my mental health like the absolute end all be all priority of my life. And after several years, it worked. I was doing really well. I'm still doing really well. I'm going to always be doing really well because I prioritize this. Mm-hmm. So when when my close friend and creative partner, Brittany, got like a doozy of a mental health diagnosis, I was like, dude, join the club. I fucking got you. Like, this is totally manageable. Now, Britt and I go way back. We were in an improv group in college and we were super tight, like sisters. Like, we could fight. Like, we were so close. That is like true intimacy when you can fight with somebody and know you're going to be okay on the other side of it.
And yeah, it doesn't ruin your relationship. Yeah.
Not at all. I feel like it even galvanizes it. It even makes it stronger because you understand, you're learning each other, right? Mm-hmm. Through conflict, you learn people, and understanding is always, always good. You know, over the years, we'd supported each other through many low points and high points. And the thing that always got us through it was jokes. Like, we could be silly with one another, even when we were feeling super shitty. You know, we would hang out, we'd get each other at a house, we'd go rock climbing. We had the same size feet, so like we would rock climb. Whoever was on the wall would wear her rock climbing shoes, and the other one would belay in their bare feet, and then we'd switch. That's like, she'd come over and like, we'd play piano and guitar and like make up these really stupid songs. Just, we would make joy even when we were feeling shitty. So like, when she got her diagnosis those years later, I look back on our friendship and I was like, okay, we can get through this. We've done this before. Now, she may have had a few things going on, but like, what she was officially diagnosed with was manic depression or bipolar disorder. And she was actually pretty stoked about it in the beginning. She was like, this explains so much. Oh my God. Like, there's a rule book for this. There's medication for this. People manage this well. Let's fucking go. And so she was a really big advocate of breaking down the stigma of bipolar, that it wasn't hard to be bipolar. The things that made it hard to manage were the ways that it was like perceived in society that like resulted in her life being hard because she was bipolar. And she was just really brave and open, and it was galvanizing for her to talk about it. And I know that for me in the past, the way that I have coped with stuff is through art. Like, I wrote a pilot after I got out of the hospital that was really healing for me. And I write songs. I find it's hard for me to process things or like stop them from just going around and around in circles until I give my thoughts or my feelings like structure. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's like in scripts or songs. And for Britt, it was conversations and jokes. So I was like, dude, let's make a podcast. Let's like interview our funny friends and demystify mental illness and create something in the middle of what we're processing and let it help, you know, shepherd us through this and build community with other people instead of like looking back on it with like 2020 vision, be like, phew, so glad that's over. Like, that's not always helpful. That doesn't always make people feel like they're not alone in it. And that was really what she wanted to do. She really was like, I don't want to feel alone. I want other people to know they're not alone. And you know, the podcast went well enough. And it was really helping Britt, but it was really motivating her. And she was so excited about that. She wanted to do a one woman show. And I was like, I love that for you. I don't want to do one woman show. So I directed her in it. And then it was just a lot. Like, one woman shows are really hard. So we decided the next one we would perform together. And I started writing it. And I wanted to open with a song. I started writing this song about my sister and the conversation that we had that kind of, you know, jump started my survival instincts after I got out of the hospital. And it was just a super vulnerable, just like, thank you to her and everyone who shepherded me through these really rough times in my life. And I wrote the first verse and the chorus and the second verse and the harmony. And I planned, I would sing and Britt would harmonize. And then we would have this like tap dancing interlude, just very grade school. Like, you know, that was so sort cute. Of the charm of it. There's like, yeah. Think little kid sisters. And I left the last verse for Brit to write when she made it through what she was going through, mm-hmm. because I was so sure that she was going to make it through. And then she didn't.
Yeah.
And I was suspended, like just like arrested, like your whole world powers down. I don't know if you've ever experienced a loss, like a big one, like an earthquake, like tidal wave kind of loss, but it's just like everything stops. You wake up feeling like the world is normal, and then it's like you remember you're in a bad story, and you're just like, no. Like I wasn't only grieving the loss of my friend, but I was also grieving the loss of like this thing that we were creating, this thing that like represented and embodied who we were to each other, and it was like proof that we existed at the same time and loved each other in this very specific way. And that thing, the idea that that thing would die with her, it just felt like it was just too fucking much. And I couldn't accept it.
Your coping mechanism is also then kind of messed up because you can't make the art because you don't have the partner. And it's,
she's my sounding board.
Yeah. And so you've got several versions of loss going on. That's so horrible. Sorry.
And thank you. I really couldn't accept it. I couldn't accept it, but I also like, I didn't know how to hold it. This idea that like this thing would die with her was just so fucking heavy, but I couldn't let it go. So I just like carried it with me. This feeling left of like, I can't let it die. I can't let it die with her, but what do I do with it? Cause no option moving forward felt good. Like I couldn't rewrite it for one person. That felt gross. Mm-hmm. I couldn't recast her. That felt even grosser. I almost wanted to like perform it as written for two people, but with one person just gesturing toward an empty space and like interacting with an invisible person, which felt funny but also like kind of fucked up and dark and like bordering on insensitive, like imagining that someone who's like I'm always thinking that like my audience is somehow navigates these same things, so I'm like thinking of someone who's like processing depression or like a loss from depression would see that and misinterpret like themselves or their loved one as like the butt of a sick joke. Like I knew it was such a delicate line to dance around, mm-hmm. and it would be really, really hard to do that by myself without like a sounding board to like ground it and make sure the intention was landing. But I just felt like Brit would have thought that was really funny, you know, especially the tap dancing part of someone just very choreographed, doing this very choreographed thing and then like pausing for someone who's not there because they're dead. Like she would have thought that was so fucking funny.
It is. It's very dark humor. It's amazing. Yeah. But also you're like, is that attention gonna
So I was trying to stay active during this whole time, just like trying to get out of my house and get in the sunshine and be in my body and be in the world and just ground. And I went to the art walk at the brewery, and I'd never been before. I'd heard about it, but I'd never gone. And as I was driving there, I noticed that the art walk was right next door to the rock climbing gym that she and I would go to, the Stronghold.
Mm-hmm. Is this in LA?
It is. It's in,
I'm relatively new, so I don't know.
Okay. It's not downtown. It's not Boyle Heights. It's not Lincoln Heights. I don't actually know what this part of town is called, but it's sort of like southeast downtown. Okay. And it's a very specific part of town. Like the brewery is like a very specific, like complex. It's sort of a landmark, I guess. And it's right next to a rock climbing gym called the Stronghold. And after I walked around the art walk, I just like let my curiosity just sort of like, and probably a little bit of masochism, just like lead me to the Stronghold. And I'd never been there without her, and I hadn't been since last time we went together. And remember when I said that like Brit and I would share rock climbing shoes? Mm-hmm. Well, when her friends and her boyfriend's friends were clearing her stuff out of their apartment after she died, her boyfriend pulled out her rock climbing shoes and was like, "Hey Sam, do you want these?" And I was like, "Yes." And he put them in a pile that he thought was my pile and of things that I was like taking. And somehow the wires got crossed and those shoes accidentally got donated to Goodwill. And I just kind of chalked it up to, well, I guess they're gone forever. But when I walked into the Stronghold, I was like flooded with this somatic memory of like us climbing there and dicking around and being silly and having fun, you know, just the joyful moments of our friendship. And I just had this very strong urge to go to Goodwill and find these shoes, even though it was months ago. Like, there's no way they're still there. Yeah. There's no way. But I was just like, I gotta find these shoes. I gotta go. I felt like Brittany wanted me to just like go. I felt like I was manic myself for a second. It was just like heart palpitations, just like very important. I have to go straight to Goodwill and I have to get these shoes. So mm-hmm. I do. I get in my car and I go to the Goodwill and I like speed. There's no reason. Like, I'm going like 50 to 35. I could have chilled the fuck out, but I was just like, I gotta get there.
Yeah.
And I walk straight to the shoe section, and the very first pair of shoes that I see, I probably see them from like 50 feet away. They are not her rock climbing shoes, but actually a pair of tap shoes in our size.
Oh.
Brand new.
Oh my gosh.
They looked like they'd never been worn. The taps weren't scuffed up, not even a little bit. I went there thinking Britt wants me to find her shoes, and I did. That was like all I needed. I felt like she was saying, do it. Do the thing you think I think would be funny, because it is. I got you. Let's go. Just made me feel like I wasn't, you know, by myself. I like pay for the shoes. I go to my car and I just weep. I just fucking lose it. I just sit there and I fucking weep. I just felt like I wasn't carrying this thing by myself anymore. And that was really beautiful, but I still had a lot of questions,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, shoes aren't going to do it. You know what I mean? Like, now, one of our podcast guests, Nick Kocher, is a really great comedian, lovely person, said something on our podcast that like really impacted me. And I can't remember exactly what. I've never been able to listen to our recordings back because Britt stored them on a hard drive that's encrypted, and her family hasn't been able to get past the encryption. So as much as they want us to be able to access that work, it yeah. just doesn't seem possible.
And you hadn't put them out yet?
We hadn't put them out. No, yeah. we were going to do 8 episodes and then like release them yeah. as we kind of got momentum going and like figured out how to do it. And we taped like 4 or 5 episodes, and then we decided to take a break and do the solo show and then the other shows and then come back to the podcast and mm-hmm. you know what happened. So I just have to accept that that's gone. And so I do my best to remember. And I wish I could watch it because it was just so important to her. And I've gotten messages from psychics too, that she wants me to, but we can talk about that in a second.
Yeah. Oh,
there, do something. She wants me to do something with it. But I can talk to you about that in a minute. If we have time. So this one interview, where this guest was talking about being in a really stressful fight with his partner at the time, mm-hmm. On a vacation, and having this moment of clarity where he was like, I think this fight might not be about the thing we're fighting about. It might actually be about the story I'm telling myself about the thing that we're fighting about, mm-hmm. and like caught himself in this moment and went, I need a minute, and like removed himself and like found a private, safe space where he could just like get quiet and like listen to himself and just be like, you are enough. I do remember that. Just like him, like hands on his chest, just going, you are enough, you are enough, you are enough. And I was like, that, I got to do that right now. I got to find a place where I can get quiet. Now, I couldn't go home. Like, I lived with a partner who was really lovely and is still one of my best friends, but like things weren't good with us at the time. And like our mm-hmm. home was safe, but it was not a place where I could really ground.
Yeah.
So I went to this meditation center in Mount Washington, and I found this really lovely bench in a clearing just surrounded by these like tiger lilies and flowers. It smelled so good. And the trees around this clearing were making the like sunlight come through in these beams. It made the particles of dust in the beams like look like glitter. And I'm sitting there focusing on what I can see and smell and taste and feeling my breathing and just feeling so grateful to be in a body and thinking mm-hmm. about how Britt isn't anymore. And thinking about how I almost did what she did in 2015, but I didn't because of my sisters, and thinking about her sisters and how much I cared about them. And, you know, I wrote this song about my sisters pulling me through, and Britt never wrote her verse. And I just sat there and just like held her sisters in my heart and like in my mind, like a whistle on the wind. I hear the melody of the song I wrote just like, And I got my notebook out, and I just started to get like a jumble of like all these phrases and words, just like an avalanche in my brain. I just started writing it down, what I was getting, not thinking about it, not even processing what it was, just brain dumping, just mm-hmm. going, I'll make sense of it later.
Yeah.
Just writing and writing, writing, writing. And I wrote it all down, and the download kind of stopped, and I looked at what I had written, and it was a message. It was a very clear message, basically saying, what I did wasn't your fault. I was in a lot of pain. You helped me, and I'm okay now. And Emily, it was in the same verse pattern and rhyme scheme as the rest of the song.
Oh my God.
I shit you not. Like,
oh my God.
Scout's honor. Now, maybe I made it up. Maybe I made it up. But if so, I'm a fucking genius, and I have doubts about that. I put a plastic coffee cup in the microwave the other day, so genius feels unlikely.
Oh my God. Oh, so what did you do? Did you use it as the final verse?
I did. I felt pretty confident that it was her. It kind of took me a second to process it, but I was like, okay, so this is how I know it was her. There's two things. One, she rhymed a word with itself, which you can't do. That's not how poetry works. I'm a perfectionist. I would never do that. You can't. That's cheating. And there were a few times where I was like, I might just tweak that. And I feel a very resounding, no, Sam, it doesn't have to be perfect. I said what I said. And then two, she makes a very distinct reference to Mountain Dew, which is very like, okay, like, did you just not find another thing that fit into the rhyme scheme? Like, what the fuck? Like, Mountain Dew? Well, I shared, the first thing I did was I shared all this with Britt's sister, Britt's two sisters, like I do. And as I was sitting in this meditation garden holding her sisters in my heart, I get this message, like, I have to share it with them. This is not about me. So I was talking to Britt's sister and I asked about the Mountain Dew reference. And I was like, did Britt like have a weird obsession with Mountain Dew when you were kids? And her sister goes, not that I recall, but I did.
Oh.
So I wrote this song about my sisters helping me navigate like the dark inner workings of my mind.
Yeah.
And my sisters, of which I considered Britt one, and then Britt wrote her verse about hers.
Oh gosh.
Yeah. So yeah. And I felt like I felt like at that point I had the information that I needed to know that she was like doing this with me and rooting for me and like wanted this.
That you weren't just plucking random words from the universe. Yeah.
No way. And, you know, there have been little things that along the way that she's like nudged me on throughout the process. Like, it's hard producing. I don't know how to do it. Britt was our producer. It was all very, very intuitive for her, and I'm not that person. So like, you know, just trying to piece together how to find all the stuff for it and like get all the props and all the set pieces and get the people in the space and find the space and get the tech. It's a lot. I'm learning how to do it now. It's taken me about 5 years, but there have been different times throughout the process where I'm just like, man, this is hard. I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if maybe I made all that up. Maybe I'm not actually supposed to do this. But one day when I was having that, those thoughts, I was running in my neighborhood and, the only prop I really needed that I couldn't do without was a microphone stand to just sort of like represent the space on stage that she,
yes,
occupies,
yeah,
just like energetically. And I was like, where am I going to get a fucking microphone stand? Like, this list is just going to keep growing. And just feeling like, woe is me. I'm doing this by myself and that sucks. And I turned the corner and sitting in the middle of this crosswalk where the crosswalk kind of turns back into a sidewalk, I shit you not, blocking the path is a fucking microphone stand. So it's like there have been little things like that.
Was just like you could take it? That was free?
Oh, I took it. I did.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I fucking took it. Amazing. It's the problem of my show. It's like a set piece of my show. But yeah.
Holy cow. I love that.
Yeah. There are other things, but I feel like those were the ones that really like cracked me open. And like you could say that my brain was making weird connections because I was grieving. And like you wouldn't be wrong, but also like, look, that doesn't mean the connections aren't real or sound or correct. Like grief and loss and these big moments, these big like, these life or death experiences, they fucking crack you open. They create I truly believe that like what Western culture sees as mental illness is like, there's a spiritual element to that, right? Mm-hmm. You just got to have boundaries and like learn how to navigate your own thoughts, because like what you're experiencing, what you're carrying, it might not be all yours and it might not be as scary as it feels. You know what I mean? Like there have been times in my life where I have felt like my entourage is pushing things to the surface that need to heal, that I need to feel myself, I need to feel my way through, and I need to dig it out and clear it out. And, you know, like they hold accountability for that. And that's sort of, you know, I say like just have boundaries and like, you know, manage your thoughts. Like it's an easy thing. It's super fucking hard, but it does get easier the more you practice and the more you sort of train, you know what I mean? It's like, thinking about it like it's a superpower, like your mental illness can be a superpower if you learn to manage it, if you take responsibility for it. Like it's, you know, that great power comes with great responsibility kind of thing. Like therapy can be like superhero training. I think a lot about like do you know David Foster Wallace?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so he's a writer, prolific, really, really talented. Just his perspective is just really groundbreaking. And he was a professor at Kent State University, which is a small college in Ohio where I grew up. And he 1 year did like the commencement speech for his graduates, mm-hmm. and they like published it. Like it's super profound. The speech is called "This Is Water," and it starts with two young fish are swimming along, and they come upon an older fish, and as mm-hmm. they pass the older fish tips his little fishy hat and says, "Morning, boys, how's the water?" And as the young fish smile and nod, and they swim away, and when they're out of earshot, the one young fish turns to the other young fish and goes, "What the hell is water?" And he goes on to talk about all these energies that we navigate on a day-to-day basis are that water. That they're esoteric in the sense that they are only acknowledged by a small amount of people who are consciously and mm-hmm. intentionally reminding themselves to be aware of them. And that those people can navigate the world a little bit more meaningfully because they know what that energy is, and that they are but a small part of a very, very big, you know, deal. I would argue that that perspective is true while also acknowledging that like someone who is fully in the water doesn't see it the same way that we don't see air. Like we know it's there, we interact with it, it has an effect on us, but we're not thinking about it if we're in it, you know? And so people that do see it are conscious, people that do see the water are consciously aware that there is also a not water. If water is a metaphor for the day-to-day mundanities that make a life, someone that mm-hmm. appreciates that knows that there is also a not life. Mm-hmm. And that is sort of this weird kind of gift that like grief and loss kind of gives you. It's that this side is the acute awareness that this side is finite and the other side is infinite. And so there's no rush to get there. It's not something to be afraid of, but it's also not something to rush to either because that transition only goes one way.
Right.
Now, that's David Foster very Wallace.
Wonderful. I like that a lot.
I think so. There is a caveat to it in a sense. I have to mention, because it's thematic. David Foster Wallace died of suicide. Mm-hmm. I hate that I can't see his brilliance through a different lens, but I also think it's true for him and true for everyone that his depression was at times a superpower, because look at the perspective he offers, you know, mm-hmm. and because he thinks so deeply considers these big, scary ideas, it gives him this perspective and a stakes that's incredibly meaningful. I mean, like people that get that low that they would consider suicide, speaking from experience, it's not an impulsive thing. Mm-hmm. You think about it for a long time. You likely want to do it for a long, long time. And so in a way, they're experts at life. You know, nobody else has faced that mega boss at the end of the video game so many times and won. Because every time you don't do it, you win. You buy yourself more chances to like unlock the next level and figure it out. And you might be right there, like right on the edge of a breakthrough. And I think that people that manage mental illness are kind of straddling both sides of the veil, you know, between worlds. And the way you stay here is you get into your body, you get into the water, you swim, you go, "This is water. This is water." The same way that our podcast guest was like, "You are enough. You are enough." You tell yourself, you make meaning. You make meaning of it. You make meaning of the water. You make meaning of whatever it is, and the meaning that you make of it is going to be real for you. So I have learned to be very careful about the narrative that I tell myself, what the water is, what the water means. And it can be hard to sort of boss yourself in this weird way, but that's how you take responsibility for it. You know, cause like, you know that part of the superhero movie where like they haven't learned, like they have this power, but they haven't learned how to manage it yet.
How to use it.
They don't know how to navigate, and something terrible happens. Like power can be destructive. Water can be dangerous. You can drown.
Yeah.
But if you know what the water is, if you learn how to swim, if you learn how to pace your breath, you can do some really cool shit. So like, I know this episode might be kind of triggering for some people. I just want to encourage people to like take care of themselves and be gentle with themselves and know that like, as cool as it is that Britt is with me on the other side, that we have this sort of spooky and or spiritual connection, there is not a day that goes by that I do not wish that she was with me here in a body.
Yeah.
And I know that things can be really hard, and this world can get really dark, and it can be harsh, but there's also a lot of beauty in it too. You've got to look for it. You got to train yourself to look for it, and it gets easier to find, you know, like as dark as the world is, it can also be really beautiful if you, you know,
can I ask,
if you
like,
believe
what,
such things.
What would be like something as you are learning to harness these abilities and all this, what would be something that you don't do anymore because it just simply does not serve you?
That's a great question. I'm very discerning about who I spend my time with and the energy that I surround myself with. I'm very protective of my energy.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
And it's not in like a negativity, positivity kind of way. I would never say that I avoid negative people, because I think that there's perspective there, and there's awareness there, and there's accountability there, and all those mm-hmm. things are important. But like, I'm very aware of what drains me and what fills me up. And I find that I need a lot of solitude.
Mm-hmm.
I never really had that in my life until like relatively recently. You know, I come from a big family, and you know, I'd always had roommates, and I had a few opportunities to like live by myself, and it was really scary to navigate. But I also found that like it was so necessary for my mental health, because I didn't know how to get quiet before that.
Mm-hmm.
Like it felt so scary to do. And then once I spent that quiet time with myself and just sat with myself and I learned to listen better to myself and what I need. And I started to learn how to differentiate between my own voice and other voices. And I'm still on that journey. I'm still figuring that. I'm still mm-hmm. navigating that. But I do get better at it the more I consciously practice. It's like sort of a mix between mindfulness and like in like solitude and really like wringing myself out from energies that aren't other energies. And it's helped me learn myself a lot better too. And that's really important to be able to ground in yourself.
I have another question that's sort of related, which is, how do you know the difference between like a download and you just having a rush of ideas?
Sometimes you don't. I think that a lot of people think that they made something up when they just heard it, when they channeled it. I've been there a few times. My show, the show that I was telling you about, a lot of it came through these downloads, and I thought I made it up. And I have since read some books that were written by like death doulas
mm-hmm.
or mediums.
Mm-hmm.
And I shit you not, there are verbatim phrases in those books that I wrote in my script 5 years ago.
Wow.
Like there's a guardian angel character who's like exasperated from running around after a self-destructive client.
Mm-hmm.
And she's very ADHD in the sense that like, she's just juggling a lot in her brain all the time. But it's sort mm-hmm. of, you find out that it's sort of an organized chaos.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I made her up, and I don't think I did. Like the more I research what she's talking about I don't think I made it up. I thought I did, but I didn't, because they're out there, and I didn't, you know, these ideas, these phrases, even like literal sentences that I could cut and paste. I hadn't had any access to them before, and yet there it is.
You had this language that you were like, I don't know why I'm using these words and I'm using this language. And then you're like, oh, this is the language that is being given.
Yeah.
To not only me, but other people that are spiritually in tune.
Mm.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. And I think it's okay to a certain extent that like what feels like creative is actually channel, because I think that that's what like God is. God mm-hmm. creates. God is, you know, like this collective energy of life. It's like, you know, those bumper cars that like have those old school bumper cars. So there's this place in Cincinnati called Kings Island, and they have this, it's an amusement park, and they have this bumper car ride that's like from like 100 years old. And there are these big bumper cars, and they have these metal poles that stick straight up to, yep. and they touch onto like a grid, like a metal grid.
Yes.
And so like they can move freely around the grid because there's the grid is electrical current.
Yes.
I feel like a body is the bumper car, but like what animates it is that God energy, and that electric current that's going through the grid, that is God energy, that is collective conscious, and that thing, that energy that animates us, also creates. I think we're most godlike when we create. And so I think that it's very, it makes a lot of sense that you might not be able to tell the difference between something that you made up and something that you channeled.
I love that. And for a comedian, it's like, yeah, don't steal jokes from other people. Just take it directly from God, baby. Why steal jokes when,
when you have a direct channel to the divine.
Right. From your friends, when you could just steal them from God.
Exactly.
I love this. I love this conversation. Are there any other instances that you want to talk about? Or do you want to, like, plug your shows? And
I do want to plug a show. I mean, this podcast would be 8 hours long if I told you everything, but I'll tell you the most recent one that happened. My friend Jessica, who's another Aries woman, we love our Aries women. She's been pregnant, and the other day I was vacuuming my house, and I just kind of looked up, and I just like saw her like screaming. In my head, just like really struggling.
Oh my God.
And I texted her. I was like, you're screaming in my head right now. I'm just sending you strength and love, and I'm with you. And I like put my vacuum down, and I just sat there, and I just like held her like in my heart. And the next day she texted me when she finally had her phone back on her. She texted me and she's like, you are truly plugged in. I was like, maybe like an hour after I texted her, she was her final push, and she finally got the baby out. But she was in labor for like 20 hours.
Oh my God.
She was literally, when I saw her screaming in my head, she was literally screaming.
She was, and you had no idea that she had gone into labor.
Nah.
Insane. Not,
yeah.
Oh my gosh. Give this woman a TV show, okay? Holy shit.
Wouldn't that be cool if your gift was that cool, like reliable, that you could like show up in a place and be like, yeah, like, you know, if you could treat it like a party trick. I'm not that strong. I don't think I could do that, but I just think it's neat.
Yeah. Like go up to a guy and be like, the next time you meet a woman named Jessica, hit on her. She's gonna hook up with you. Yeah. It would be incredible. But yeah, unfortunately, I don't think most people are like that I've spoken to that are so intuitive.
I talked to, when I was having a lot of these experiences, I, you know, like I said earlier, I was worried that it was like a mental health problem. And I like went, I went to tell my therapist about it, fully expecting her to be like, okay, there's a name for this. Let's get you on some medication. This is manageable. We can do this. And she didn't. She was like, wow, you have a very strong intuitive gift. Have you ever talked to a psychic? And I was like, are you fucking licensed? Like, are you serious right now? Like, just not expecting her to say that. And she actually encouraged me to like cultivate it and like learn how to sort of like, I don't say control it, but just sort of like learn how to use it. And I did. I went to talk to two different mediums and spiritual healers and stuff about this. And they both told me the exact same thing. The first one told me that Britt communicates to me through song, and I felt like she was talking about the song.
Yeah.
But also like we have a couple of songs that just like they just keep popping up in the world, and that could just be the radio. I don't know how weird that is, but like, but I do feel her presence with some songs specifically. And then she also said that there is a desk somewhere that's like red and or brown. It's like an old desk. It's got three drawers going down the, what side is this? Right. I struggle with left and right. I always have. Three drawers on the right side. There's two skinny drawers on top and a thicker one on the bottom. And in the thick drawer on the bottom, there's a file. They neither one of them could tell if it was a digital file, if it was like an actual file, like a notebook, and that there's something in there that we were working on together.
Oh my God.
She wants me to pick up and run with, and that exact phrasing, pick up and run with. And I went to one medium, and then I went to another medium who told me the exact same thing. And I was like, okay,
holy
so there
shit.
There is the option that like, I don't know, maybe all these psychics went to psychic school and they just say, this is just something that they say to everybody. But there's part of me that doubts that, like, people that believe they're psychic would be that organized.
Yeah.
Like, as one of them, I am not. So it just feels more likely that, that it is real, that they are getting it from Brit. And then the second psychic told me something that actually kind of fucked me up. When I talked to you about, like, you know, whether or not to pass along a message, I kind of was on the receiving end of something that fucked me up a little bit, where, not in a bad way, I mean, this, she was so helpful and she did give me the option to not listen. And I was like, I was kind of like not really thinking it was that big of a deal. So I was like, fuck it. Like,
let's go.
Whatever. I'm already here. So, like, might as well do it. And she, so I was engaged to a really, really lovely, really lovely person. Up until leading up to Brit's passing, I was in a relationship with a really wonderful person, but, like, I was kind of starting to come to terms with the fact that, like, we weren't really for each other. And that was really triggering for Brit. Like, she was just in a weird space where, like, she was just convinced that if I left Max, that, like, her boyfriend would leave her. And it was just like, so I just kind of, like, stopped talking to her about it. And then she passed. And my partner and I kind of started talking about maybe, like, uncoupling. Mm-hmm. And then I found a lump in my breast that was not behaving like a nice lump. It was behaving like a scary lump. And so we attacked that pretty aggressively. And then when we were on the other side of that scare a few months later, we kind of looked at each other and we were like, I love you. I will always love you. Like, you are my Dolly Parton song, but, like, this isn't for us anymore. And mm-hmm. I was really feeling alone, really feeling like my most important partnerships just in the matter of a few months, just, like, completely fell out from underneath me. And so I went to see this psychic who told me that the person that I had just, ended things with was not actually my person, and that my person is somebody that I already know.
Ooh.
That it's somebody that, that we've known each other for a long time, and we've just kind of, like, been aware of each other and kind of kept an eye on each other from afar, but we've never really, like, linked up. Like, mm-hmm. we might be acquaintances. She said that what she was seeing was two planets that were orbiting around one another.
Mm-hmm.
And that the reason that we haven't landed yet is because they aren't ready. There's some things that they still have to learn, and that I don't have to do anything, but I just have to take care of myself and know that when they're ready, they'll make their way to me.
Oh my gosh.
It's interesting dating with that
right?
Knowledge or understanding. Cause, like, I'll meet somebody on Hinge and I'll just kind of be like, you're nice, but I don't know you. So you're not right. You know, like, I have to really catch myself. I have to really catch myself. Cause that was what, like, 4 years ago or something. Like,
and you're like, how long is this person going to take? Cause
I'm fucking ready. Yeah. Like, I've been ready, you know? So yeah, it's now, I don't know that I would want that information, but,
cause it's hard to fully invest in anyone when you have that information.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like I don't have agency over my choices when it comes to that. You know, I feel a little bit like, not like what's the point, but it's just sort of like, I don't know.
But if time isn't linear, then it is your choice. It's just your choice in the future. That's so,
a very good point. If he's my husband, he's always been my husband.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good point.
This has been absolutely amazing. I love this conversation so, so much. But Sam, tell people where to see your show, where to find you, where, tell them anything you want about yourself.
Yes. Where did my phone go? I had my dates for my show on my phone and then I put my phone elsewhere. I am Sam Bowling. I'm on Instagram. You can find me at the Samantha Bowling. On Insta, and my show is gonna, it's called This Was Never Supposed to Be a One Woman Show, a one woman show.
I love that title.
Thank you. It's going to be part of the Hollywood Fringe Festival. I'm working out of the Broadwater Theater in Hollywood, and my dates are June 2nd at 10, June 9th at 7, June 10th at 2, June 18th at 9, and June 24th at 3:30. So I'm going to put all this information on my Instagram. I will be, I mean, just utterly blitzkrieging people with all this information over the next few months. But like, if you're in town, come through. It's going to be a good show. It might be a shit show, but it's going to be a good shit show.
I will absolutely be there and send this stuff to me so I can put it in the show notes. And this is amazing.
Cool. Thank you. Well, this is very cool.
So much for doing the podcast.
Thanks for having me. This was really fun. Thanks for being so receptive and open. You a real one.
Thank you for listening to Comedians with Ghost Stories. If you want to throw me a follow, I am on Instagram at EmilyMCWinter. Again, that's EmilyMCWinter. Also, rating and reviewing the podcast helps people find it so we can keep growing, and that's good for the whole world.